Welcome to the Workshop Review Podcast, the only podcast that gives tools away. This is episode number 14 for April 24th, 2019. On today's episode, we're talking about tools. Hand tools, power tools, when we like to use, which type, all that kind of stuff. My name is Brian McCauley. I'm one of the hosts of the show. Brandon Marshall, sitting over there, is the other host. Say hi, Brandon.
Well, hello there.
Well, hello.
Hello.
And just right off of the top of things here, if you're interested in supporting what we do, head on over to patreon.com/workshopreview and see if there's something you wouldn't mind signing up for over there. Brandon, what's new, buddy?
It was Easter weekend. Not a whole lot was new. Ate some ham, ate some sausage, did some things.
Oh, God, so much ham.
Yeah. Yeah.
A lot of ham.
Gonna be eating ham for a while. Which brings me up to an observation I had made.
Uh-oh.
It has been brought to my attention that all families make ham. So, for instance...
It is like the traditional Easter dinner meat.
Yeah, but I mean, that yes... Yes, that is true. But what I'm saying is I have talked to a few and found on more than one occasion, not more than one occasion, but in everybody that I have talked to, each family is cooking their own ham. So not only are they going to some form of family get-together where there's going to be a large ham served that is going to have way more leftovers than the hosts could probably ever eat, such as myself. But then they also go home and make their own ham, which is most likely going to be way too big for the two people or four people that are there. And I say that because both my in-laws and my wife's aunt and uncle, as well as I think my parents even, you know, we invited them all over for a big Easter meal on Saturday night, and like, yeah, well, we're still cooking a ham on Sunday. And I went, well, why don't we just cook one ham
and take some of mine, please?
Yes, and you can take some, and then we don't have to eat it for 8 days or waste any of it. So this concept didn't go over well. I'm like, I don't get it. This just makes sense to me. Like, why should we have sense. So much ham?
That's what we did here. My family came out and stuff. Erica and her kids are in Florida for Easter, and so we had a smaller Easter here this year. But you know, it was my kids and my parents and stuff like that. And that's what we did. They all just took some ham with them. I still have way too much. Even now, being Tuesday, we cooked it on Saturday. I still have way too much ham, but yeah, they didn't cook their own hams.
See, so that, I mean, that just, that makes sense to me. But,
it does.
You know, I can sleep. But, so yeah, Easter, it was great. You know, toddler, little Benny Boo, got to hunt for a basket, hunt for eggs.
Is that what you guys call him, Benny Boo?
No. sometimes I do. You know, it depends.
I was going to say, I like that.
If I'm making fun of him, and I'm waiting for him to be like, Dad. But he's not quite to that phase yet. You know, he's starting to show some attitude, but not quite that. So yeah, you know, it was a lot of fun. Lots of the normal Easter festivities, got to spend some time with the family, which was much needed. And on what day was it? I think Friday, one of the days my wife had off from work. So we teamed up and worked on the bathroom a bit together.
Nice.
Yeah, so we got, you know, a solid coat of primer across the almost – actually, I think we got primer across all of the drywall. in which then she also told me that she wants to paint the hallway the same color. So she went and did a whole bunch of edging, and we did actual white primer. I know they make paint out there with primer in it. I get it. But I had,
I don't think it works as well though, in my experience.
Here's my thing on it. I think it works great. If you're doing darker colors. But I wanted to put a coat of white paint down just to see where I might have to retouch up some of the mudding, because some of it I didn't do, and sometimes there's bubbles that are hard to see, and some areas I did really poorly, and, you know, just getting one coat of paint on to seal the drywall and kind of see where you might need to touch some things up here or there is,
that makes sense,
exceedingly helpful, especially if you might have bubbles, because you're not going to see those bubbles until you get paint on it.
Is it more help? Okay. Just answered my question. I was going to say, is it more helpful to do it that way with a coat of paint? Because that's a lot of work to put a whole coat of paint on. Is that more beneficial than, just doing the drywall and the mudding and all that stuff, and then using a raking light to look for those, you know, little imperfections?
Yeah, the paint's easier.
Wow.
So, okay. So here's the thing. So, if you're really good at doing drywall mud, then you have no problem with this. Those of us that do it, you know, once every 3 years, you sand in between the mudding and this and that, and, you know, sometimes your paper gets a little, extrudes from the mud, and it's really hard to grasp how much will be covered by paint. So when you throw that one coat on, especially if it's, you know, like a ceiling coat for the drywall, or in this case, we know that we're going to put a very light colored paint in this bathroom. So doing a whole coat of white, which I had sitting in the basement, just made sense. You know, it was going to be a lot easier than getting the final coat on and having to repatch.
I got you. Okay.
So then, you know, I noticed, you know, by putting that coat on, I noticed that, you know, there was a few areas where I may have been a little too light or too hard, or too light in my mudding or too hard in my sanding. So, you know, I had to touch them up a little bit here or there, as well as, you know, just some things popped out too. Like when there was white, like all of a sudden I found, you know, this one corner had this big, extrusion in it, really. Like the drywall had like a crack on the inside and was pushed out, and you really couldn't see it until you got the white on there, and then you could see like the shadow.
Yeah right.
So I went back and put some more mud on that. I mean, the nice thing is that, you know, I only had to touch up just a few areas, you know, a couple areas where there were some bubbles that I just cut out and threw some mud on. So patching it back up was, let's just say, doing it this way is a much easier fix, I think, in the long
run. Okay. Probably takes a lot more time, though, because...
Well, I think it's a lot quicker. I mean, you think about it, you're putting your ceiling coat on the drywall, you know, which, you know, it's recommended anyway. Of course, you know, the paint with primer in it would also do it, but this kind of ensures that the mud in the drywall itself gets primed really well before you put on your paint.
I got you. Okay.
And I needed to give my wife something to do, because I was also doing tile. I started putting the tile up in the bathroom.
So you guys are like coming to an end of this thing then. Like you're getting there.
No. I mean,
no.
We still have quite a bit to do, because I haven't even touched the bedroom side yet. Now, the bedroom side will be a lot quicker, because really all I got to do over there is relay some of the carpet and frame out a closet and add some lights and drywall that closet, and then that. And then I'm sure she'll want to paint the whole room. But, I mean, yeah. So yeah. As far as the bathroom's concerned, we're plugging away. It's definitely getting there.
Right on.
I've never done large format tiles before, and these tiles are 18 by 18. And
Wouldn't that make life easier, though, like, to use large tiles like that instead of, like, little tiny, you know, what are they, like, 2x3x5 or, like, the little subway tiles or whatever?
So, in theory, and I thought that, too. I was like, hey, you know, this is going to be great. I'm covering a whole lot of space. The thing about it is that you have to mortar. You use more mortar, and your trowel's got to be thicker and bigger grooves, and so working with the mortar is a little bit harder. You got to kind of have to move quicker because it takes you so long to cover the footprint on the wall to put the tile in.
Right.
So depending on the type of mortar you got and how quickly it sets up, you know, you really need to move quicker than with the small tiles. But I mean it less cutting, and you cover a whole lot quicker. It's just it can be a bit of a bear. They are awfully big.
Okay, all right. I feel as though they
would be a lot. I mean, I don't know. I haven't done something of this size with small tiles, so I share your same thought, because that's why I did 18x18. I was like, hell yeah. So I don't have much to proof in that pudding.
Okay, I got you. Well, cool. We also did the Easter thing. Kids were over. We hunted for Easter eggs. It was actually sort of interesting. Kids came over Thursday night to Saturday night. So we did Easter on Saturday, and it was supposed to be rainy and crappy all day long. And so here we are, you know, our Easter morning, and I'm debating, are we going to hunt Easter eggs inside or outside? And all Saturday morning, it had rained Friday night, so everything was wet outside, but the sun was shining Saturday morning, and it was starting to, like, dry things out. So I said, you know what, we're doing it outside. So I had the older kid sort of entertain the younger kid while the Easter buddy went outside and hid eggs. And we did our Easter egg hunt. And just as we finished, it started to rain again. So it was like perfect timing. And it wasn't too wet outside because, you know, the sun had been out. So it was shining, and it was kind of nice. And so then, you know, we did that. And something amazing happened this weekend. I don't know how it happened, but it did. When we were out there hunting Easter eggs, the grass was not, like, super tall and unwieldy, because I had not yet mowed this year. And yesterday, Monday, I woke up and I looked outside and I was like, I swear to God, my grass grew 4 inches in 2 days. I need to mow, because if I don't, another day or two, it might be too, you know, it's just going to be all clumpy and gross, and, you know, I have to clean out the mower deck all the time. So yesterday I got out the mower. I took the plow off of it. Hopefully it doesn't snow again. You never know, but hopefully I don't need to plow again. And put the mower deck on, and I mowed my whole yard yesterday. It was a nice change of pace, and it made me happy. And I got sunburnt.
And it didn't snow.
It didn't snow. It didn't snow. But do you believe it? I got sunburnt in April in northwestern Pennsylvania.
Brian, I get sunburnt in the winter.
Okay, that doesn't happen to me. But I do tend to, like, burn. I'm not a tanning person. I'm just a burning person. And I was really surprised. I didn't think I needed to worry about getting sunburnt yesterday. Because on Sunday, it was freaking cold as hell in the house. Like, I had to start a fire. The weather's just insane.
It's crazy. Yeah, it's been all over the place.
It's crazy.
I mean, yesterday we went to the zoo because daycare was closed. So I needed to do something with the kiddo and get some energy out. And so we ran up to the zoo. And in the morning, I mean, it was in the 40s. But, like, as soon as I think 11 o'clock hit, all of a sudden it was like, nope, I'm in the 60s now.
Yeah, yeah, it was quite the day yesterday. So that's that's kind of me. Spent most of last week just preparing for Easter, and we did it at my house, so, like, you know, I cooked and I hosted and stuff, so had quite a bit of preparation to do. Now, granted, my mom helped an awful lot, like, but, you know, still, we did it here, so I had to be prepared and all that stuff. Didn't do a whole lot in the shop last week. I did make it up to the barn to start looking through the wood that I need to treat with the Boracair, and just reacquainting myself with that enormous stack in the back to just kind of wrap my head around exactly what needs to be done and just how much wood there's still up there that I need to move to do this with. It's a lot, man. It's a lot of wood. I've used a lot of the wood, but man, I still have a lot. And it's going to be such a pain. It's going to be such a pain. But, you know, it is what it is.
It will be fine.
It will be. It's just, you know what really sucks about it is before we move, I have to go through all this wood and treat it because I'm not going to take it to the new house if it potentially has powder puss beetles in it.
Well, yeah, but you're not, I mean, you're not putting it inside at the new house.
No, but I just.
I'll just take it to the new house and lay it out and treat it.
I don't know. I don't even want to know.
If you got to move it, you might as well move it once. So,
well, this is what I'm saying.
Move it to the new house.
This is what I'm saying. I don't want to move it twice, but there's no way I'm taking that wood up there to the new house before it's treated. That is the last thing that I want to introduce into that area if they're not already there. Because apparently, you know, maybe we should talk about this today. There's a big, the last year or two, there's been a big powder post beetle, like, resurgence or infection. Or they're coming back, or, like, in force, I guess. You know, there's been more accounts of them.
After the oak, from what I've heard.
Yeah. They're eating up all the oak.
Yeah. Last year it was ash. This year it's going to be oak.
Yeah, well, if you think back, even last year and the year before, there was a big thing with walnut, too. There was an intrastate ban on moving walnut out of the state it was already in. So,
but that wasn't because of bugs, I believe. That was like,
yeah,
that was. I thought that was a canker or something, an actual, like a fungus.
I thought it was bugs. I guess I could be wrong. Doesn't happen often, but I could be. I thought it was bugs. I thought it was bugs.
Let me just go ahead and say, if it's between you being right and me being wrong, I'm going to put money on you being right.
And watch me be wrong. We'll have to do some research. But
we need to call up Shannon. That's what we need to do.
We do need to call. He started a new podcast. Did you see that?
Yeah, I saw that. I haven't listened to it yet, but you know, good for him. I'm happy.
Yeah, it's all about the lumber update. He turned that segment from Wood Talk into a show. I think there's only one episode out. At least when I listened to it, there was only one. Yeah.
So they're coming. They also, Wood Talk guys did a quarterly.
They did. They're gonna bring it back.
It was infrequently,
but they'll bring it. Yeah, it was almost 2 hours.
Yeah.
But that was nice. That was nice to see pop up in my feed. I was like, "What is this?
Yeah,
Wood Talk is in my feed.
What's happening?" I would agree.
And it's 2 hours long. I'm in heaven.
Yeah. No, it was good though. But yeah, so
anyways, before I forget, Shannon's thing, lumberupdate.com is where you can go and listen and, you know, subscribe, you know, do the RSS thing, all that crap. So go do that. 'Cause everyone loves Shannon. He's a nice guy. We used to be almost neighbors in Maryland. Well, neighbors is a bit of an exaggeration. We were like 30 minutes away from each other. So we would talk and we got lunch a time or two and stuff. So he's a cool guy.
Wow.
Ooh. So we're like 20 minutes into this, Brandon, already, and we haven't even hit our topic.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah. So what are we talking about today? Not bugs.
We are talking about, honestly, we're talking about the hybrid woodworker. The choice between hand tools and power tools, when to, when not to, or just what your preference is.
You know, I really like that term, hybrid woodworker, because
I feel like there was a book out by somebody or something, you know, a guy that puts woodworking books.
Mark Spagnuolo.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. You know, that rings the bell. Yeah. Of course, I'm hitting at the Wood Whisperer. He does have a book out for the hybrid woodworker that came out, I think he wanted to say, many years ago.
Yeah, probably like 10 years ago.
Yeah, I was going to say it was 10 years, but don't quote me on that. He also just recently put out a whole new book on joinery.
Essential joinery, I believe it's called.
Yeah, so I have no idea how that is a book. Like, part of me really wants to read it, but at the same time, I'm like, this seems very odd. But
what seems odd about it? It's a book that teaches you how to cut joints.
Well, I mean, is it just a picture book then with instructions? You know, is it talk about the history of the joint or why it's going on or, you know?
Well, I think it's more of just a collection of these are the, you know, sort of the most important joints or the most used joints, and this is how you make them. And yeah, there are a lot of pictures in it and, you know, explanations on, why you would use a joint as a mortise and tenon as opposed to, I don't know, a bridle joint.
Don't get me wrong. I'm not knocking it. Part of me really wants to check it out, and I'm really happy that he did it because knowledge is power and learning is awesome, and it is kind of nice to see something that isn't in video form. I was just exceedingly surprised at how thick it looks.
It's all those pictures, man. Yeah. It's very little writing. It's mostly just really big pictures, I'm sure. But I too would like to look at it. I haven't seen it yet. The only things that I actually know about it are from, you know, Mark's social media when he was working on it. But that's, yes, we're talking about you're right, the hybrid woodworking method. So the majority of woodworkers out there, I would assume, are power tool guys, and they probably also have a decent collection of hand tools. And, you know, when do you use what? So, Brandon, why don't you start?
Well, I have a very interesting take on this. So, considering that I would consider myself more of a hobbyist than you, for sure. And I want to say that I'm going to generalize and say that a lot of people are probably like this, that when they get into the woodworking hobby, they are enamored by the idea of hand tools and by the look of them and having that cool shelf on the wall that's full of hand planes, but tend to resort to power tools because the skill that it takes or the time and patience it takes to use the hand tools is hard to grasp at first. It's very challenging. You know, you can't just pick up a plane and start using it. You got to sharpen it or hone it and tune it in, and you got to learn and all of that. So there always seems to, you know, I don't care what kind of hobbyist you are or where your level is at. You most certainly have hand tools in your shop. Like,
at least chisels.
It's bound to be there, you know, a plane or chisels. Right. And myself, I have a large assortment and use very few. However, it is something that I am constantly striving to do more of because I found even though it takes me twice as long to do it, it is way more rewarding to use a hand tool, especially like a hand saw and a chisel to make a joint than it is to go over to a table saw or a router or anything like that. You know, the not having to have earplugs, most likely not having to have half the safety gear that you would need if you're using a power tool. You know, so it's definitely something that I'm always striving to do more of.
You know, speaking of handsaws, my Eric Florip 20-inch panel saw has been shipped.
I was going to ask you about that.
It is in the mail on its way to me, and I'm pretty excited about it.
So that was something I was also going to bring up, is that, you know, last year about this time, we reviewed one of Florip Toolworks' dovetail saws, and he is a maker out there that makes saws. And he's really ramping up production quite a bit. If you follow him on the Instawebs, but
yeah, his tool acquiring is pretty insane.
Yeah, I just noticed on his site he's got a benchtop saw that I now really want. Like, it looks really pretty. Anyway, so he's one of those, you know, tool makers out there that was like, I want to make really nice hand saws for the hobbyist to be able to use. So it was a great review last year. We had Ann Briggs or Ann of All Trades comment on it. She uses a lot of his stuff. So go check out Eric Florip at floriptoolworks.com to see his saws collection if you want to get into really good quality hand saws at a really reasonable price. And there's a bunch of other boutique makers out there that do saws and chisels and card scrapers and all sorts of things. So definitely help support those makers. But back to the topic at hand, the when to hand tool and when to power tool, I think really comes down to your patience and skill level.
Well, it's also a personal preference thing, I think. You know, when I first got into woodworking, I used hand tools extraordinarily seldomly. Mostly for the reasons that you were talking about, the sharpening, setting them up. You know, I didn't know how to make them work properly. And, you know, when that happens, you just get frustrated and you mm-hmm. don't want to use them. But that first time that you get your number four, your smooth and plain, all tuned up and nice and sharp, and you finally get the shavings off of it that you're supposed to, and you see what it's finally supposed to do, oh man, you can't go back from that. You just can't go back from that. But what I really like using my hand tools for is like refining joinery. Basically the philosophy behind Mark's book, I've got some specialized planes, I guess, shoulder planes, that sort of thing. Like if I'm cutting rabbits, I'm absolutely going to hit them with a shoulder plane. If I'm cutting joinery on my table saw, say maybe I'm cutting a mortise and tenon, and I'm cutting that tenon on my table saw, I'm going to get my big, you know, inch and a half wide chisel, and I'm going to pair the faces and the cheeks of that tenon to get a nice fit. I'll use oftentimes like block planes and things like that instead of a router to create chamfers or even roundovers. I tend to use my hand tools for detail work, not like big roughing work. Like I'll use my machines mm-hmm. for that. Like I'm not going to sit there and I'm not going to mill my lumber with hand planes, you know,
with
like
a number seven.
Yeah.
Yeah. I have to, agree
I have
on
a
that
number
one.
Seven. And I have used it. Sometimes it's easier just to grab a number seven if you're working on a board, like at your bench or something, and you know, reestablish a straight edge than to take it over to the plane, or not the plane, or the jointer. But yeah, I very rarely do stuff like that with my hand tools. But I guess I can say I have. I have S4S to board with hand planes before, just to see if I can do it. You know what I mean?
And?
Yes, I can. And it wasn't a very big board. It was only, you know, it was maybe like 6 inches wide, 20 inches long, something like that. But, you know, just to see. And I have one plane that I really, really like for curves and stuff. It's a record circular plane. Is what it's called. It's sort of the equivalent to the Stanley 113, the compass plane, mm-hmm. except it's Record's version of it. And for fairing curves and planing curves and things like that, it is awesome. And, you know, what I really should do, and it's, what I used to do, was I would use, you know, my number four instead of sanding. It is faster if you know how to set up your tools and use them properly. Physically, it's definitely more work. But for some reason, I'd say in the last year, year and a half, I really haven't been doing that. I've been sanding. I should go back to using my number four. Like before, you know, like you assemble a piece of furniture, hit all the parts with your number four and then assemble it, and then do maybe just a little tiny bit of like touch-up sanding type thing. It's really nice when your wood is just like glassy smooth. You know what I mean? And I haven't been doing that, and I should get back into it.
Yes. Now, I recently got a router plane, and I'm very excited to use that. I haven't had the chance yet, but still excited.
You know, that's a hand tool that I don't have. I've considered making them before.
Me too.
But they appear to be extremely useful, and I definitely want one. Like, specifically for joinery again. You know, if I'm cutting dados on the table saw, I would use a router plane to take that dado to, you know, its final depth and make sure it's all consistent and everything like that. That is definitely a use that a use for a router plane that I would do every time I cut a dado.
That makes sense.
Yeah. So, I mean, are you kind of in the same boat? Do you, I guess, aside from the love of using hand tools, or, you know, that feeling that you get when you use hand tools and your tools are nice and sharp and everything's working properly, is that really the only time that you would use them? Or do you have, like, a specific, okay, this is a hand tool job?
Nope. So what, I guess I'd like to say I'm still learning the hand tools, you know, honing and finessing. So there's lots of times where I go, I'm going to try to do this at least once with a hand tool and then move to the power tool when I need to, or if it's really repetitive. Or there might be times where I'm trying to get into something with a power tool and I go, nope, I'm going to have to do this. This is going to be delicate. I need to get in there with a hand tool.
Mm-hmm. Is there any operation or, you know, joint or anything like that that you think should just always be done with hand tools?
No.
So I am a little bit of a purist in this respect, I think. I think dovetails should always be cut by hand. Unless you're doing like a kitchen. You know, a bunch of kitchen cabinets or something like that. But, you know, if you're just even like a chest of drawers, like nine drawer chest or something like that, hand tools all the way.
So,
but that's just me.
So, yes, I can agree with the dovetails, kind of.
Now, that's not to say that, like, you know, hand cut dovetails are better than machine cut. I'm sure machine cut are fine. It's the aesthetic for me. You know, you open up your kitchen drawer and you see those dovetails in your kitchen drawer. You know that those were cut by a machine. Everything's perfect and symmetrical and there's no, like, artisticness to it. You know what I mean? But when you cut them by hand, you can vary the size of the pins or the tails or the number of them. And, you know, it's definitely a way to say this was touched by a human.
My my thought on it really is that I think that Dovetail should always be set up as though they're going to be cut by hand. As in, and be able to have that layout. However, I don't care if you use a table saw to cut them, or some people have jigs to do it on a bandsaw, or I don't care if you use an actual dovetail saw, but I don't like seeing the dovetail machines, the dovetail jigs.
Like with the routers and stuff?
Yes. The ones that give you a perfect dovetail every half inch or whatever.
All right, I can get behind that. I can get behind that because it is the ones that are made on those dovetail jigs that use a router that have the appearance that I don't like.
Correct. So if you don't, if you're not good with a handsaw and you want to cut them on the table saw, that's still a really interesting way of doing it. I've always wanted to try to do it that way.
See, even with a table saw, you can't get that super tiny pin just because of the curve of the blade. Now, you could do it on a bandsaw, I suppose, or at least much closer. But yeah, I guess I'm down with that. I guess I don't see a problem with cutting those straight lines with a bandsaw or a table saw. Yeah.
Yeah.
Still got to chop out that waste, though.
Yeah.
Sharpen up those chisels, baby.
So what is the hardest hand tool that you have that was the hardest for you to master, or that you maybe still aren't mastering?
Probably the circular plane. It has an adjustable sole, so you can match the radius of whatever it is that you're planing. Mm-hmm. And it always takes me longer to set that thing up to make it cut the way I want it to cut than it actually does for me to use the tool. When I first started using it, I thought, oh, okay, this radius needs to match exactly. The sole of the plane needs to match the radius that I'm planing exactly. And I think I've come to discover that that's not actually the case. At least in my experience, I found that it works better if the radius on the sole of the plane is slightly tighter than the radius of the curve that I'm planing. If it's an inside curve. If it's an outside curve, I found that the radius, if it's slightly a larger radius, then it works a little bit better. So there's some fine tuning that needs to happen, not just with sharpening and setting the blade and all that stuff, but also getting the proper radius on the sole of it. And it took me a while to figure that out. So yeah, that was the hardest one for me to learn how to use. What about you?
Well, I think they've all been pretty difficult. Much in the fashion of being on the newer side of woodworking, I tried to rush most of my usage and learning instead of taking the proper time of setting up tools. Let me back that up. The time to properly set up tools, which I'm, been diving into more and more as, I think it's the first time you get one of those wispy planer shavings that you realize that juice is worth the squeeze.
I did a good job.
Yay. Yeah. I set up tools.
So I've never, all of my hand tools are mostly vintage. Not all of them, but most of them mm-hmm. are. Mm-hmm. So the vast majority of my hand planes, actually, other than that record, are all pre-war Stanleys. So they took a lot of time to bring back to life. I didn't buy them in bad shape, but you got to flatten the sole. You got to make the sides 90 degrees. You got to open up the mouth a little bit. I did put new irons in mine. I got irons from Veritas. So there is some work that needs to be done to them. But once you learn how to do that and figure out what's important and what's not important, you can really make those old tools work for you. And I feel like that's kind of the boat that you're in. You have mostly vintage tools as well, as far as your hand tools go, right?
Correct.
Yeah. It takes some time.
Yeah. You know, I mean, unfortunately, one of the things about getting older tools is they're definitely not always in the greatest shape. So,
right. This is probably a topic for another episode, but I got really lucky with a lot of the planes that I bought. I bought most of them from one guy, and he was like a collector, and these are just planes he was selling off. Mine were in pretty good shape. Like, they weren't awful to put back into, you know, working order.
Well, that's good.
Yeah. So, you know, we're on the back half of the episode here. What do we have for steals and deals and things that I might drool over?
Yeah.
Got any good stuff this week?
You know, there's not a whole lot jumping out at me, you know, just coming out of Easter. Most of the sales are either continuations or have concluded. I think Rockler's still pitching their woodworking month sale until the end of April.
That would be this month, yeah.
Yep. The Grizzly's doing up to 65% off of all of their metalworking accessories.
What is an accessory? Like, what is a metalworking accessory?
Lathe chucks, arbors, measuring instruments, calipers, things of that. Milling accessories.
Oh, okay. All right.
Yeah. But I did see that Grizzly did put out a new joiner, an 8x72 with a built-in mobile base. So
yeah, they recently put out two new jointers, didn't they? They're both 8x72.
One's got a helical head, I believe.
Oh, okay.
Maybe not.
I think they're the same jointer. I think they just have different like accessory. Like one has a built-in mobile base. I think the other one's on dovetail ways. I think they're both the same, but I, you know, minor differences.
They're both the same but different. Okay.
Yeah.
Got it.
You know what I'm trying to say?
Yeah. Absolutely, I do. Sure. Sorry, wrong link. There we go. Saw Stop is doing is working with all of its resellers currently, Woodcraft, Grizzly, all of them. And if you buy a professional cabinet saw, you get a free upgrade of either the integrated mobile base or the overarm dust collection system.
You know, they've been doing that for a long time.
Yeah.
Offering one or the other. And I think they're both probably cool. And we've had this discussion. I think I'd probably go with the mobile base.
But, and I'd probably go with the overall dust collection.
Yeah, yeah. But, you know, I've been thinking lately of upgrading my table saw. And I think if I do that, I might go the way of the saw stop.
I see.
Man, yeah. I have a Grizzly hybrid saw. It's a cabinet saw, but I think the difference is that the trunnions are mounted to the table instead mm-hmm. of the cabinet. I think that's the only difference. And usually, like, table mounted trunnions are something you'd find on like a contractor saw or a job site saw. But it's a 2-horsepower saw, and I think I wouldn't mind like a 3 or 5 horsepower.
Yeah, I mean, you're not doing sheet goods, so absolutely.
Yeah. I mean, it cuts fine. Like, it's okay. I do think I need to, like, replace some bearings in it. But it's, you know, if I'm going to be tearing it apart and doing work to it and stuff, maybe I should just get a saw with the horsepower that I want.
Yeah, probably.
Yeah. I don't know. Things for the future.
You know, shop upgrades are always for the future.
They are. I think I need to upgrade my bandsaw before my table saw, though.
I would agree. Not that yours is bad. It's just small. So that's actually it for the deals, teals, and things you might drool over. Figure we might round out the end of this here podcast with talking a little bit about who we're reviewing this month.
Oh, of course.
Which is Starbond, baby. Starbond adhesives.
Yeah. You know, we did a review video. We talked to Joe in the last episode about their glues and everything, and you know, it's CA glue, and it's I guess I'm having trouble finding something to say about it that we haven't already said. It's super strong.
It's great.
Way stronger than I thought it to be. And I find tons of ways to use it that I hadn't thought of before until, you know, I had a bunch of it in my hands. And it's a really good thing to have in your shop. It takes place of epoxy in some situations. It gets you working faster, less downtime, all that kind of stuff. And it comes in colors. Like, what? That's awesome.
I mean, yeah, that's it right there. Done.
Yeah.
Sold.
Absolutely.
So last week we had a guest from Starbond and Isabon, and we want to thank those of you who participated in asking questions. It was
absolutely
a really good time, and the folk over at Starbond really appreciated it as well. They were very excited to talk. So that was pretty awesome.
You want to hear something kind of interesting?
Sure.
Starbond made a post on Instagram asking a question. I don't remember what the question was, but I commented and I answered it. Oh. And they used the commenters on that post for like a little giveaway type thing. And they gave away glue to three people, and I was one of them.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm sure the person who ran the giveaway, you know, didn't know that I was sort of involved with Starbond. And I said to the lady, I was like, you know, you guys have given me enough glue. Why don't you give it to somebody else? I thought it was kind of funny that I won a contest for the glue that we're giving away this month. But, and so they did. They gave it away to somebody else. And it's nice to know, I guess, that, you know, somebody else out there is going to get an opportunity to use it that, you know, maybe hasn't yet. So I did a good deed. I just thought it was funny that, you know, they were going to send me more glue.
Such a nice guy.
That's how the world turns. You know, you got to be, you got to give back. And that's what we're trying to do. We just want to give back, you know?
Yeah. I mean, that's how it all got started. You know, and speaking of giving back, you know, we would love to hear from you all over what you want us to review in the future. And if you help us spread the word so that we can get more people and more cool stuff in your hands.
That's what we're trying to do. Do we have anything lined up? I feel like we don't.
Nope, not at all.
Crap. So next month might be the first month that we don't do a giveaway in quite a while.
Yeah, it has been a little while. I have reached out to a few, but I have not heard anything back. Of course, it was over Easter weekend, so that's not terribly surprising.
Hmm. Yeah. Well, we're going to have to change that.
Yeah, well, originally we were looking at a spoke shave, but
yeah, I think that may have been, gone to the wayside.
That may be delayed.
Yeah.
Inevitably.
We could go back and see what's been, you know, one of our most popular giveaways and see if we could do, you know, something similar, maybe like a similar or, you know, another product from that company.
Oh, well, you know, that's true. Yeah. Yeah, there is definitely that. Or, you know, it is also coming up on well, no, pass that. Never mind. Forget what I just said. We could definitely look into that, Brian. Absolutely.
What would you say has been the most popular?
I would definitely have to go back and look. I know.
I bet it's.
What do you think it was?
You know, the Mox and Vice, I feel like, was pretty popular. I would imagine the Worksharp was pretty popular. The Dovetail Saw, I bet, was popular. We'll have to go back and look. But, you know, maybe we can do something like that. Maybe Eric would be interested in doing a review with the panel saw.
The Dovetail Saw was our biggest.
Was it? That was the
one that was popular. Yep.
Well, maybe we should reach out to Eric and say, "Hey, Brian, is getting this panel saw. Why don't we do a review and a giveaway?" I bet he'd be down for that.
Yeah.
At least talking about it. I don't know. We'd see.
Definitely see if he wants to do more. I know. I also saw that he's doing some Mark engages too. So
yeah, I did see that. Yeah.
Might be an opportunity. We can reach out to
him. That would be cool.
See if he wants to, you know, and come to think of it. Let's see when that. I bet you I could pull up when that ran. It ran August to September.
The Dovetail Saw?
It did. Yeah.
All right. Yeah, let's reach out. Let's see if we can make that happen.
Yeah. Yeah.
You hear that, guys? We're just spitballing. We're coming up with stuff. And hopefully, we'll get to give you guys a saw out of it.
See how we work here. You know?
Fist to cuff, man. Flying by the seat of our pants. That's how it works.
Yeah. But all in good ways.
Mm-hmm. But, guys, seriously, go check out the Starbond review. It's pretty cool stuff. You know, I know I've mentioned it before, but historically I've really just used CA glue for like minor repairs and things like that. But it, after using it and after, you know, sort of familiarizing myself with what it can do versus what I thought it could do, it's extremely useful. And, if you put it in your shop, you will use it, and you'll find some really interesting ways to use it. And, you know, it's just a good thing to have around. So go check out the review, enter the giveaway, win yourself some, and change the way you glue things together. How's that?
That's fantastic.
All right, cool. So where can people find you, Brandon?
They can find me at the Marshall's Wood Shop on Instagram, YouTube, and wherever social media is accepted.
Are you still on Twitter? Do you still use Twitter?
You know, I don't even know. I don't know that I ever had a... I mean, I have a Twitter. I just don't know if it's the Marshall's Wood Shop or... I must. I imagine it is. I don't know. I log into Twitter and I get all confused and there's like birds and... I still don't understand Twitter.
You know, Twitter used to be the bee's knees.
Yeah, I know, and I couldn't get into it then. I mean, let's put it this way. It took me probably 10 years to get onto Instagram because I just didn't get it.
See, I didn't get Instagram either. I got into Twitter, and I realized there's actually really, you know, the community on Twitter is really, well, a couple years ago, it was really good. I don't know. I haven't been on in a couple years. But, you know, there's bleed over to other social media outlets and stuff.
Oh, yes, of course.
Anyways. I was just curious because you said you could find yourself on all the social media stuff. You can find us, Workshop Review, on YouTube and Instagram. Send us some DMs and tell us what you would like us to review, and we'll see if we can make it happen. And you can find me, Macaulay's Design, on YouTube and Macaulay's Design on Instagram. You got anything else for us, Brandon?
I do not. I hope y'all can make it a great day.
All right. Go build something, guys.
Thanks.
And glue it together with Starbond. Starbond.com.
That would be nice.
I had to throw that in there. All right. Talk to you later, Brandon.
We'll see ya. Bye-bye.